Previously on the Back to You podcast.
I just think it would be wise if we anticipate what Gracie may be feeling.
I see. Train wreck of the soul. By the author of Damaged for Life. Damaged for Life.
Okay. I played Kaneki in the sixth grade production of Grease. You reviewed it for the school paper. Said my performance was stilted and pandered shamelessly to kindergartners.
You're Jerry Williams?
You said that I was, quote, grease frightening. And that I should be hopelessly demoted. And that you were summer not loving me. It wasn't even a review, man. It was just an excuse for a series of puns.
You're the one that I don't want.
An actor that comes on board with an ensemble like, you know, Josh Gad, Ty Burrell, and legends, you know, Patricia Heaton and Kelsey, you know, you just hope you served the script and you made them happy. For me, it's on to the next job, you know, and say a little prayer that, you know, the show, their show goes on for 10 years and maybe I'll come back, you know, but yeah, it's always on to the next job. But yeah. I do remember that as a standout episode in my career because of the talent involved.
This is episode 12 of the Back to You podcast, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, there's going to be a trivia question based on this episode at the end of this episode of the podcast. Submit one guess per person on Twitter at Back to You Pod for your chance to win the Back to You Complete Series Season 1 DVD. And coming up later on in this episode, actor Ian Reid Kessler, who currently stars on the Disney Channel series Sydney to the Max, he played Dennis on this episode of Back to You, 2 Steps Forward, 1 Step Back. Ian Reid Kessler will be joining me here on the podcast to talk about working on Sydney to the Max and Back to You. Let's get right into it. Here it is, episode 12, 2 Steps Forward, 1 Step Back. This picks up right after episode 11, Hug and Tell. Kelly has just told Gracie that Chuck is her father, and then Kelly fainted onto the couch. We pick up right from there, and they have a conversation, the three of them, Chuck, Kelly, and Gracie, who are the three primary characters of this episode. There's hardly any Marsh McGinley, hardly any Gary Shrewsbury, and hardly any Ryan Church. It is a Chuck, Kelly, and Gracie story, because now Gracie is reacting to this big news, and she isn't quite sure how to handle it. She asks a few questions about how Chuck and Kelly had her, and Chuck gets into some discreet details. But Gracie really gets mad at Kelly for lying to her, for not telling her until now that Chuck is her dad. She remembers lying to a friend about getting a puppy. Now that's going to be important later on. So Gracie gets mad and she storms upstairs. And Chuck and Kelly are eventually going to talk things out. This is a big episode because we flash back in time to Chuck and Kelly's last night together at News 9 on New Year's Eve 1997. Now, remember on the last episode of this podcast, I mentioned that there were a lot of continuity changes between the first batch of episodes and these batch of episodes of Back to You. This is another one of those cases. In the pilot episode of the show, it says that their last night together, Chuck's last night at News 9 in Pittsburgh, was New Year's Eve 1996, but because they changed the actress who plays Gracie from Laura Morano to Lily Jackson, they made her a little bit younger, they had to change the story a little bit. So it is now New Year's Eve 1997 when all of this happens. And you can tell they make the News 9 newsroom look a little older, look a little more gray. Maybe they put a filter on the camera for these flashback scenes. It's Chuck's last night. There's a banner that says, "Good luck, Chuck." And it's funny because fairly recently there was a movie out at that time with Dane Cook and Jessica Alba called Good Luck, Chuck. So there's a banner there, and Marsh is there, and everybody's celebrating Chuck's last night. Turns out, Chuck really finally admits that he did wear a wig all those years, and he takes his wig off his head and tosses it into the garbage, saying goodbye to the wig. He'll be off to Minneapolis, St. Paul. Now, this is another continuity error in the pilot. One of the key scenes where Chuck and Kelly reunite, and she says, "Where have you been all these years?" And he says, "Denver, Minneapolis, and then LA, and now you're back down to Pittsburgh." Well, now Minneapolis is the first place that he went, then Denver, and we learn a little bit more about his Denver adventures later on in this episode, and then LA. So he's off to Minneapolis, early flight in the morning. He goes into his shared office with Kelly, and Gary is there. Gary is measuring things because Gary really thinks he's finally going to get that anchor job. Gary's also got a mustache.
Gary, you're still here?
I'm kidding. Goodbyes are tough for me. I got your stuff all boxed up.
Planning on getting the anchor job?
Oh, yeah. I'm getting all the signals from upstairs. Not a minute too soon. Last week, I was out doing that world's largest flapjack story, and I ran into Roger Fern from Channel 8. Poor bastard's been doing remotes for like 5 years. World's largest loser.
As it would turn out, a little foreshadowing here, Gary would be doing those kind of niche stories for the next decade. Then Kelly comes in and tells Chuck that Marsh and the other guys are playing floor hockey with his wig. Kelly is drunk. And she's actually going to be the grand marshal at the parade the next morning at 7 a.m., and it's going to be 2 below out there. Chuck is convinced that she can't drive herself home. Remember, that was in the pilot episode, too, where Kelly had just done a story about driving with some shots, I think, of tequila already in her as she was going around a driving course. So he thinks she should call a cab. She tries to call a cab using a stapler, and then they kiss. They kiss multiple times. Chuck telling her that she's a Pittsburgh institution. She claims, even though she's drunk, that she wants to get a job at a bigger market. But once they kiss, they realize there's something there, and they decide that they're going to go separately but meet up at Kelly's house for the rest of the evening. But that news gets out into the newsroom, and Marsh hears it, and he and everybody else decide, hey, it's time to go to Kelly's house for the rest of the party, so they're all going to Kelly's house as well. Then we go back to the present day. This episode goes back and forth so many times. Chuck and Kelly are sitting on the couch. They're still fixing Gracie's science project. Remember, this picks up right after the last one, so they're still working on that solar system. Chuck ends up gluing his finger to his thumb, and so Kelly thinks there's some nail polish in the kitchen, so this is the first time we actually go into the kitchen of Kelly's house. And it's there that Chuck thinks, you know what, I should go upstairs and talk to Gracie, because Gracie actually comes down and she's still mad about this whole thing, and she goes back upstairs. Chuck thinks, maybe I should go up and talk to her. She should get to know me a little bit. But Kelly's not really thrilled with that idea. She manipulates and tricks Chuck again, this time gluing his hands to the table as she deals with somebody at the door. And you know who's at the door? It's Ryan. The writers had to find a way to get Josh Gad into this episode because, of course, he wasn't at News 9 back in 1997. Ryan shows up to Kelly's house to pick up an old bookcase. She says this was the only night this week that Ryan could come by to pick up a bookcase. Ryan's at the door, and instead of bringing along Gary, because he says Gary and Kitty have a new therapist, he brings along his friend Dennis, who is a huge fan of Kelly. Some might say borderline obsessed.
Hey, Kelly. I really appreciate you. Oh, right. Kelly, this is my friend Dennis. He's a big fan of yours.
Oh, thank you.
No, Miss Kelly Carr, thank you. You are the queen. Jan Prescott is a joke.
Okay. Dennis, remember our little talk in the car? Callie, I am really sorry about this. I was going to bring Gary, but he and Kitty are breaking in a new marriage counselor. You know, the older I get, the less attractive marriage looks.
On the other hand, some things look more attractive the older they get.
Hey, Dennis, could I possibly see you outside for a second?
What is your problem? I thought you were a classy guy. You are not the only person I know who has a van with a carpeted interior.
We flash back to New Year's Eve, 1997. We're at Kelly's house. Everybody's still there at the party, but Chuck and Kelly want them to get out so they can have their night together. So they start kicking people out. And so the first group of people leave, and then Marsh is there, and then Chuck keeps running around the house. Gary ends up being there. He keeps running around the house saying goodbye to everybody like it's his last time that he's off to Minneapolis. And in the Gary section of this, Gary is talking with Kelly about who he should be in a relationship with. He's currently with this woman. She's great. She's a surgeon. But he's attracted to her sister named Kitty, who's like a firecracker. And he's wondering who he should go for. And he decides that because he wants to go big and be the anchor, he's going to go big and start dating Kitty. Then once everybody's gone, Chuck and Kelly are together and they go hook up. Present day. Chuck goes see Gracie upstairs in her room.
Gracie, can I talk to you for a minute?
No.
Wow. What a nice room. Oh. A little messy. My room is exactly the same way. You get that from me.
Every kid I know has a messy room. Do they all get it from you?
I sure hope not.
Why do you smell like you just took nail polish off?
Oh, it's nothing scary like you think. Your mom glued me to a table. So, who's this?
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, one of your little friends at school?
Yeah, I go to school with Miley Cyrus. Zach and Cody are in our class, too.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know what's happening.
To try to bond with her, Chuck tells her a story about the station manager in Denver. 5 years ago, his first day there, Chuck hit on a woman in the elevator, and it turned out to be that station manager's wife. So the station manager and Chuck didn't get along so well, but then 2 weeks later, the station manager loved Chuck. Chuck sums it up by saying, I'm a pretty lovable guy. But he sits on this doll on Gracie's bed that her grandma got for her from France. Now, that is correct, continuity-wise, because remember the episode with the raccoon, Something's Up There? There were accent pillows from France, Kelly said, that she didn't want Chuck to use to attract the raccoon, get it out of the house, get it out from under the couch and all that. So that is correct, that doll would be from France. Chuck ends up breaking this doll. The head comes off when he takes it out from under him. And Gracie's very upset. Kelly comes running upstairs and she and Chuck talk things out in the hallway. Chuck goes downstairs and Kelly and Gracie have a little bit of a conversation in her room about how Chuck has to get used to the fact that he is now a dad. When they go downstairs, Chuck is not there, and Kelly gets very concerned. Remember a few episodes ago, Wall of Fame, when they're standing in the dumpster, Chuck tells Kelly, I'm not going anywhere. And we think that he's keeping his promise. We hope, she hopes for sure, that he's keeping his promise. One more flashback. It's New Year's Day, 1998. Chuck and Kelly have spent the night together. Kelly has to be the Grand Marshal of this parade pretty soon, so it's got to be about 5 a.m. She gets up and sees that Chuck is about to leave, run off without really saying goodbye. Kelly tells him she was going to make them breakfast, but Chuck doesn't want to go down that path again. He says, I've been through this before.
You were about to run out the door without saying goodbye, weren't you?
I was going to leave you a note down here.
Where, in the snow?
Kelly, have a lovely night. We're not about to top that for a goodbye. And I got a plane to catch. What's more, you're making breakfast.
What does breakfast have to do with
anything? You're not making breakfast. You're making plans.
What plans? happens?
Look, I've been through this before. I know what happens. Breakfast leads to, are you sure you have to go? And if I get out the door at all, by the time I get to Minneapolis, there'll be a little bear sitting there with a Mylar balloon in his hand that says, I miss my honey.
He and Kelly get into an argument as he's going out the door, and that's how their relationship ends at that time. Of course, during that night, Gracie was conceived, but they don't know that quite yet. But that's the rocky end to their relationship, which is why they're very tense in that pilot episode. Back to present day, one final time. Kelly is still very worried that Chuck is not coming back at all. She hears a knock at the door, and it is him with a puppy. He got a puppy from the pound, and Kelly thinks that this isn't going to make Gracie like you automatically, but it does. Gracie loves the dog and immediately names the dog Norman. Then Kelly hugs Chuck and starts crying. They both kind of tear up because she was afraid he was gone, and he reassures her that he is not going anywhere. The final scene of this episode, Two Steps Forward, One Step Back, does not include Ty Burrell. It doesn't even include Josh Gad or Fred Willard. It is Kelly and Dennis. Dennis knocks at the door and he is back. This is like the next day. Dennis, played by actor Ian Reed Kessler. Don't forget, Ian Reed Kessler is coming on here in just a couple of minutes. So he is back. She opens the door and it's him like John Cusack in that classic 80s movie Say Anything with the boombox over his head trying to woo her. But of course she's not having it again and she's got Norman with her and Norman scares off Dennis. And she's thrilled that Norman has done this and is going to give him a treat. That is the last we will see of Norman the dog on Back to You. But I'm sure there would have been some more storylines. Maybe Chuck had a day out in the park with Norman or bring a pet to work day. Anything. The possibilities were endless with what they could do. This concept of now this new formed family and the local TV news scene, the possibilities for storylines are endless. Sometimes you look at sitcoms, even dramas, even some of the shows that are coming on this fall, and you think, maybe these storylines work as a movie, as a 90-minute or a two-hour movie. We go from plot A to plot B, but how can they get viewers and keep them coming back week after week after week and not make it feel so repetitive and so cyclical? I know a lot of older people watch these drama shows, Law and Order, and it's a case, a storyline per week, and there is a beginning and an end to it, and then you just come back the next week and it's another beginning and another end. But a lot of these sitcoms have, you know, one-note storylines to them. How can you expand upon that? How can you make it fulfilling for a season or a six-year series? The great thing about Back to You, if it had stayed on the air, was that I don't think the writers would have run out of ideas anytime soon. There's so much you could do with this. That's why movies and TV shows have come back to it over the years. Look at Great News on NBC, which ran for two seasons. John Michael Higgins and Nicole Richie playing the anchors of a cable news series. And they had a lot of different storylines. They went to an award show, a throwback to Mary Tyler Moore as well. I'm sure Chuck and Kelly would have done the same thing with some kind of award show. A lot of different storylines with that news theme. Viewership on Two Steps Forward, One Step Back, which aired on Wednesday, April 30th of 2008, 7.12 million viewers. That's a 2% decrease from the last episode, Hug and Tell, but pretty even with Wall of Fame, which aired 2 weeks earlier, which got 7.11 million viewers. So pretty even. So not too bad, just a 2% drop. But now we're going to enter a pivotal time for Back to You. The final two episodes that aired on Fox were aired in the month of May. If you know anything about television, you know that May is a big ratings period. Networks do a lot of things with their shows, whether it's special guest stars, crossover events, extended episodes, or all these different specials. Look at the All in the Family Jeffersons live event that ABC recently did. Huge ratings for them in the month of May. Doing variety shows and things like that to boost the overall ratings, because if you come out of the May book looking good, you can essentially go all the way into the start of the season of September, and even into the big other ratings period of the year being November, you can go into all of that being on top, number one, a hit network, hit channel, hit series. So Fox is going to look at these final two episodes and see how they do, and look at the cost of Back to You and figure out, should we keep this show on the air? That's going to be key into the next two episodes of the Back to You podcast. Remember, the next two episodes are not the last two episodes of this podcast, because we've got two more episodes devoted to episodes that aired on Fox, then the three that didn't air on the network, and then a final thoughts episode. So this closes the door on the second phase of the Back to You podcast. Remember, I said a while back that this is like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, divided up into three phases of six episodes each. This is the end of episode 12. That means the end of phase two. Phase three, the May episodes, the three that didn't air, and final thoughts and stories about the impact of this show on me and its stars and creators over the past decade. Joining me right now on the Back to You podcast is Ian Reed Kessler. He's currently on the Disney Channel series Sydney to the Max, but he also played Dennis on this episode of Back to You. Two steps forward, one step back. Ian, what's going on?
How are you, sir? Nice to talk to you. It's nice to see that people are giving some due to a show that I thought was pretty darn funny and didn't last as long as it should have.
Oh my gosh, it should have lasted for years and years and was so funny. Yeah, it's built up this cult following over the past decade. I'm kind of spearheading it, but people love this show. People love it. How did you land the role of Dennis on this episode?
I think it was just, you know, it's a standard, L.A. story. I went in, I auditioned. I'd worked with the casting directors before, if I'm not mistaken, at that time. I mean, we're going back a ways, and I'm kind of dating myself. It's like my previous career, it almost feels like. So I got it, and I was super excited because first off, the role was funny. It was like a super quirky kind of out there guy, and I got to do stuff with Josh Gad, which was great. But just when you looked at the cast list of who was in the show, it was like a who's who of comedy geniuses, especially in the sitcom genre. And I'm a sitcom junkie a little bit. It's my dream job. What I'm doing now with a sitcom, it's what I'd like to do every day for the rest of my life. It's the greatest job in Hollywood, without a doubt. But when I looked at who was in it and who was going to direct it, it was just like, well, this is a job you got to try and get. So I was lucky enough to get it, and it was a blast working on it.
Yeah. What has always appealed to you about sitcoms? A lot of comedies these days have gone to single camera instead of the multi-camera. What is it about a sitcom that has always fascinated and excited you?
Well, it's actually funny. At least for me, it goes back and forth every year between, it's like everybody says multi-cam's the thing, and then they go, no, single camera's funnier, and then they go, multi-cam's cheaper, and then they say, you know, it goes back and forth. I always seem to be on the wrong end of the pilot that I shot. So if I shoot the single cam, they go all multicams that year. Hmm. If I shoot the multicam, they go all singles. For me, what I think makes it, first off, viable long-term is that it doesn't have to run back-to-back. It's not episodic, like where if you missed last week, you can't watch this week. So it's better in syndication that way. It makes more sense money-wise. But as an actor, as a performer, I did a lot of theater in New York. I grew up doing theater when I was a kid. It's the perfect blend of theater and film. You get to use your technical stuff of hitting your marks. It's multicam, so they cover you a little bit easier than they do doing close-ups and, you know, shots like that. So you kind of have to be where you need to be technically, but you get the live audience feedback. And you also rehearse it in a different way because you rehearse usually for three, sometimes 4 days, table read, 3 days of rehearsal, and then you shoot. It's kind of like working on a mini play. And you do it front to back. When you do a single cam or you do a film, it's or an episodic, you know, like a CSI or an NCIS or something like that, you're shooting out of order. You're not really rehearsing. You go through it once or twice and then you shoot it. It's a completely different beast. And I love table reads. I mean, just sitting around with everybody reading the script and hearing the words and laughing it's just all the way around. It's a great blend of live performance and television. So as a performer, I think that's why we love it. And the second thing is it's the best schedule in Hollywood. You know, you make the same and you work less. So I think everybody wants to do that.
I feel like the table read for this episode of Back to You, you talk about comic geniuses, must have been like a dream come true, rare opportunity in your career to be in the presence and to be a part of something with all these great comic geniuses.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you go with Kelsey Grammer, excuse me, but Kelsey Grammer and Patricia Eaton are like two of the funniest people on the planet, and they're sitcom gods in my mind. Mm. You could hand any script to them that's a sitcom script, and they will read it one time and make it funny. There's an innate ability they have to do that. And Josh Gad and Ty Burrell, who I did not know well at the time, I had mutual friends that knew Ty in New York, but I don't think people knew at that time when that show was on how funny that guy was.
Right.
I think he was like, he was an upstart at the time. Now with Modern Family, it's like everybody gets it. I mean, when he walks up the stairs in Modern Family, you know he's going to fall. It's funny every time. It doesn't matter. He's just funny. And it was the same way on that show. I don't think people knew really what it was at the time. But yeah, that list of people, you walk into that table read and you're like, well, boy, I better be funny today. Mm. Because otherwise I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. And luckily what they wrote for me was funny. And it's always fun, too, when you get that character. It was a broad show anyway. But when you get that character where you can be even a little bit more broad and a little funny, and Burroughs is like, go ahead, have a little more fun with it, play with it a little more, it's great. It's like you kind of get to be, it's almost like farcical, and it's really fun to do.
Yeah, and you have such great line deliveries of those key moments with Josh Gad. I mean, how did you and Josh not crack up?
We actually did quite a bit. I mean, we got along very well, which I have not worked with him since. Many friends of mine have, and he was such a pleasure to work with that whole week. But we did laugh quite a bit, and the part that I remember specifically is when we walk outside, I don't remember the scene exactly, but when we would walk outside the door, we have lines outside the door.
Mm.
And when we were saying them to each other, I don't know if Josh remembers this or not, but we actually had to deliver them not looking at each other because we would lose it a little bit. And in rehearsal, we would do it and kind of laugh, and it was fine. But on the actual live audience night, when Josh and I both walked out the door, we just turned around and had back-to-back so that we could say our lines, because otherwise we would laugh. The way he talks about, you know, going in the van and stuff, it's just... It's so ridiculous and so funny. Josh Gad is so darn funny.
Yeah.
He's just funny in his regular life. The guy's just a funny guy. He's also very smart. But when you put the smarts and comedies together, it's so much fun to work with somebody like that. And then you just laugh a lot, which is the best part of working on a sitcom.
Oh, my gosh. And
going to work every week to like, the goal of the week is to laugh sounds like a dream job. I mean, I don't want to be a clown. That doesn't seem appealing to me. I have kids. They'd probably like it if I was. I can juggle, but that's about it. But to actually say on Monday, hey, here's a script, and by Friday we're going to try and make people laugh really hard, you just get to laugh all week. That's what's so great about sitcoms. I think that's why every performer that I know of really enjoys working on them.
And then in the last little scene of this episode of Back to You, you come back because you're trying to woo Patricia Heaton, Kelly Carr, and you look like John Cusack from Say Anything with the boombox, and then the dog gets you. I mean, that must have been really fun for you to embody John Cusack in that way.
Yeah, and I grew up, I remember that movie very well, and I remember that moment very well. It's such an endearing moment, but it's such a perfect time capsule of movies at that time. And when I read it, I thought it was hilarious. I remember when I got the sides, it was both scenes. And those were the two. And it was, I read it, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is, it's so funny. And the fact that he would just be that into her, but not in like that super creepy way, it's in an endearing way, which is what I think I didn't cross the line into just some psycho.
Right.
But it definitely was, it's just like, that's how he thinks he's going to get her. He saw that movie. And, you know, this will probably work. it's super funny. It was a great homage to that film. I was happy they left that in.
Yeah, definitely a fun way to end that episode. Was there any talk? I know, obviously, you know, a couple episodes later, Back to You got canceled, and one of the main themes of talking about it on this podcast, was there any talk about your character coming back if the show had been picked up for another year?
No, I think Dennis is the reason. Dennis was a show killer. I think, no. Honestly, no, there was not at the time. Not that I remember. Oftentimes, I worked on a lot of sitcoms, actually, in recent years, where there's been talks of coming back, and then the show will get canceled, but it's like we're almost, you know, we're actually, like, setting up dates, and we're ready to, you know, hey, in season two, you're going to be the, you know, the antagonist, and, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But in this show, it really wasn't. I think it was a one-off from the start. Mm. But that was also a show with a pretty big cast, too. Mm. And they had a lot of, you know, guest people come in for an episode and that be it. I don't know if the show had gone on for more seasons. I mean, I was technically Josh's, I think if I'm not mistaken, like, his only, like, friend that he, like, introduced as a friend.
Right.
So potentially that would have been the case. I know we got along great. I've worked with Burroughs a couple of times before that and after that, and always got along great with him. And I feel like there could have been a chance, but there was no actual discussion of it. There also wasn't a discussion of the show not coming back, which was surprising to me. At the time, it seemed like everyone was very high on it, but I don't think I think it was one of those shows that it was a late bloomer. I think actually the reruns probably did better than the actual first run, which is surprising to me because I thought it was very funny.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, such a funny show. I followed it when it was on and have stayed with it for the past decade. But yeah, a couple episodes just before it got canceled, and for a lot of people, it caught them by surprise. It was just a shock, even through the crazy writer's strike year that had just happened.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too, is I actually specifically remember driving onto that same lot. I don't remember if it was for this show or not, but I remember, you know, crossing the line, technically. It was like I still had to go to work, although the writers were striking, and SAG had not at the point, you know, said, you can't work yet. And it was a very weird time. There was a lot of changes across the board. I think there were some studio heads that changed in different networks. The thing that I think is very interesting about television is that so often you catch a show late and you go, oh, I wish I had watched this earlier, and then it's canceled. Or you get invested in a show and it gets canceled and it never, you know, you never get that closure on it. And a lot of times people just think, oh, that show's funny. I know it'll be around. I'll watch it next time. But you kind of have to, you got to watch it. Mm. Like if people don't watch it, they're not going to keep it on the air. Especially now, they give you, you know, 3 weeks sometimes to prove yourself and then they pull it. You know, they didn't do that to Seinfeld or, you know, other shows, Friends, that they gave a little runway to kind of get their speed going. Maybe it was because this cast was so powerful, they thought it would do better from the top. I'm not sure, but it is a shame. It was a very funny show.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you would have been brought back for some more. I do think so.
Oh, that's very kind. Yeah. Are you doing casting by chance for anything, just in case my current series doesn't go any further? Are you casting anything? Because evidently you liked Dennis. Maybe Dennis could be on your show.
Yeah, we'll get Dennis onto something else. Hey, maybe you can do something interesting with Sydney to the Max with Dennis and your character of Max, because, I mean, you do a time jump. The storyline of this show I find very fascinating because it goes back in time, it goes back and forth with Sydney to the Max on the Disney Channel. When you initially heard about this premise, which I think is unique for a family sitcom, what did you think of the premise?
You know, it's an interesting thing. When Disney had talked to me about doing it, it was... you know, first off, it was a sitcom, which I love, and I have kids, which I would obviously love to do something that kids can watch. So often I'm getting, you know, hacked to death with a butcher knife, or I'm a, you know, a convicted felon that's being interviewed by the police, or, you know, my language is not great necessarily on Suits or something, so I can't necessarily show it to the kids. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'd guest star in some kids' shows. That would be great. But at the same time, I thought, a kids' show? Really? There's probably a talking animal, or there's some sort of, you know... there's some sort of alien involved. And I got the script, and this was like Growing Pains style. Mm. It was, Mark Reisman has never written a kid's show. The concept didn't seem kiddish to me. It seemed more good-natured, like Growing Pains, Family Ties, that type of vibe. And I thought the fact that they were going to do Max in the current time and then Max as a 12-year-old when he's with his single mother, as a single father Max is now, I thought, what a clever way to tell a story. And as a parent myself, I have a soon-to-be 5-year-old in a couple of weeks and a 2.5-year-old girl. It's interesting because so often I see myself parenting and going, oh, my gosh, my parents did the same thing. Mm. Or going, seeing my son go through something and be like, you know what, it's funny, man, the same thing happened to me. And so this show captures that, I think, very well. I think it's very well written. I think it's very funny. I'm biased, of course. but I feel like I'm a little bit like the Jack Tripper character. I get to be goofy, but not too over the top, have some funny moments, but also some real moments with Ruth Rigney, who plays my daughter. And I feel in general, it's a really clever way to tell a story and to show how kids go through the same thing their parents did and vice versa, and also how we parent the way we were parented. Hmm. Whether we want to or not, there's an innate thing there that we just kind of follow along with. And, you know, history repeats itself. And not to mention, the 90s were a great time, if you ask me. I think back in the 90s, I thought the music was good. I thought the clothes were crazy. It's just a cool... I grew up in it, so I appreciate what they're doing there. I'm really happy I'm doing it.
And I think audiences are feeling it, because not only does the second half of your first season, it's on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock on the Disney Channel, but you also just got renewed for season 2, which must make you feel fantastic.
You know, it does. Disney in general likes to give their shows a chance to kind of pick up steam. Kids, it's tough with kids, because unlike with Back to You, where it was on, you watched it, especially at that time period. Maybe you DVR'd it or TiVo'd it. But now, you know, kids are, they're all streaming and time shifting and watching it whenever they want. So it is tough as a performer. Sometimes you don't know the feedback of, well, are people watching it? Because I look at the Nielsen numbers and they seem not great compared to what I'm used to. But then you go out on the street and you get recognized constantly.
Mm.
So there is, you know, it's definitely reaching, which I'm very happy about. Disney's very happy with it. So we start our second season about a month from now, actually, and so we're going to do another 21 episodes, which will be great. I've heard a couple of storylines. They're hilarious. We have great guest stars. Much like I got to be a guest star on Back to You, I think shows in general live and die by their guest stars. You know, you can have a really strong cast, but if every week you've got a real bummer of a guest star coming in, it can really kill your show. And we have some really talented, funny people that come in, both kids. Some of them have never done anything, but they're hilarious. And season, you know, Broadway stars and comedians and stuff that are working on my storyline. And it's fun to work with them every week. So we have some good storylines, some talented people. And if you have kids, I don't know if you do or not, but if you know someone that does, or if you're listening and you do, if you have kids that are in that age group, I would say from 5 to 14, it's a really fun show to watch with them, which I love. The fact that I can sit down and watch a show with my kids, rather than go, oh yeah, you enjoy that, I'm going to sit over here and read the newspaper.
Mm.
It's nice to encourage that. And I think it fosters a little communication, which is cool too, about like, was everybody like that in the 90s when you were a kid? Did you do that? Oh yeah, I totally did that. So
yeah.
It's a cool concept. It's fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm actually only 20 years old. I do not have kids yet, but I've been watching the show a little bit, and I get
that. You got to get on it, man. It's super easy. There's nothing to it. It's really easy. Making them's easy. Having them is even easier. It's super easy. Nothing to it. It's like a dog.
But it's funny. I watched a special recently on Friends, which was a little before my time, and they had so many guest stars on Friends. It was unbelievable and really helped keep the show going. So I think you're so right about the whole guest star thing.
Yeah, and if you look back now, it's like you look at Law and Order or you look at Friends, any show that ran a long time that was good, especially that did critically well, look at Seinfeld. You look at the people that were the guest stars at the time. I mean, Bryan Cranston plays a dentist on Seinfeld.
That's right.
Bryan Cranston wasn't Bryan Cranston at the time. But you could see in that, boy, this guy's really good. And then you see the career trajectory after that. And I think there's two things that being a guest star on a show gives you. It gives you, you know, you're working your 10,000 hours like Gladwell says, right? You're doing your time. You're working on it. You're perfecting your craft. But there's also a thing of you've got to deliver on the moment. You know, on the day, you have to be able to do it. You have to be able to be funny or be serious, whatever it may be. As a series regular, the pressure is removed from you a little bit because they work with you every day. You have you got a shorthand with the crew and the directors and everybody else. So they expect, oh, it's okay, just give him another. He's number one on the call sheet. It's fine. But if you're number, like, 264 on the call sheet, and you've got two scenes on Back to You that you need to be funny in, you got to be funny from the table read all the way through.
Mm.
And on live taping night, if they don't think you're going to do it, they're going to use somebody else. So I feel like I was able to do it, which I'm very happy to say that. But
yeah.
The same with the guest stars on our show. You can tell right away if they're able to do it or not. And Friends, those guest stars, look at the careers that have since happened. Maybe they're not A-list celebrities. They're maybe not even B-list celebrities, but they're working actors. Look at the talent that they have. And those shows, the good casting directors find those people, the good directors use those people, and the good writers keep writing for them. Mm. So I think being a guest star, you learn a lot, and having a good guest star, it makes and breaks your show. You're on every week. You got the same five faces, but the other three that you interject every week, they got to be good. If you inject them and they're not good, the show's really going to suffer.
Mm. Somebody you work with a lot on Sydney to the Max is Caroline Ray as well. She's one of the other stars of the show. She must be great. I mean, watching her from Sabrina, she's done some game shows and things over the years. She must be great.
She is hilarious, you know, just a nightmare to work with, though. but in general, now she's the best. Ruth, who plays my daughter, and I actually were the first two people cast. And I got it, and we had not heard who was going to play the mom yet. And I was going through my brain thinking of who it might be. And then I went into the Disney offices, and we're going to do a chemistry read with a couple of people. And Caroline walked between Ruth and I, who were out in the lobby talking to each other. She walked between the two of us and said hello. I'd never met her before. Said some funny comment. I can't remember what it was. It made me giggle, and I said to Ruth immediately, that's going to be your grandma. There was no doubt in my mind that it was going to be her. And not only is she funny, and I mean, I'm going to date myself again and date her. I grew up watching her. I love calling her mom. It upsets her, but because we're the same age practically. But I knew at the moment, I just knew she was perfect for it. She really is. She embodies that character very well. She's goofy and funny, wicked smart. But I don't think I've gone through a two-minute phone conversation, let alone 2 minutes in her presence, without almost crying because I'm laughing so hard. She is just a funny, funny lady. She's a stand-up comic, a game show host, an actress. She kind of does it all. I don't know if she sings or raps, but if she does, she'd probably be good at both of those too. She's just really, really funny. And I'm excited this year too, because she's going to direct this year. I directed last year. I started directing last year, and I'll direct again this year, and she's going to start directing this year, so I can't wait to take direction from her and see if she can make me funnier.
That's cool.
She gives me notes all the time anyway. We give each other notes quite often. But she's hilarious. It's a pleasure to work with her.
Yeah, you've worked with some comedy greats. Was it intimidating for you to start directing episodes of this show?
It was only intimidating in the sense of once I started shadowing people, I only want to direct a sitcom. I being like, you know, Jan de Bont or Scorsese or something doesn't interest me. I don't know why, but it doesn't. Even directing hour-long episodics doesn't interest me. Directing sitcoms is interesting to me. I think it's because I enjoy them the most, working on them, and I feel like I understand them. I understand the language and the shorthand that there is there. But when I started shadowing last season, I really didn't realize how darn much work it was and how hard it was. I appreciate what everyone does on a set. Everyone has a very hard job. Actors are always the last in and the first out. We've got it made. It's super easy. Yes, there's pressure on performing, you know, and being able to do it in time so everybody can get home and have dinner. But other than that, it's a pretty low stress job compared to what everybody else is doing. But my wife was like, wait, what time do you have to go to set? Wait, what time are you going to be home? Wait, you're working all weekend on a what? On a shot list? It was a whole world that I had not really enveloped myself into. And then once I did it, not only did I love it, and it went very well. We had a great episode. I can't wait for everybody to see it. I think it airs sometime in July. But I really became more appreciative of the amount of time, effort, and just flat-out knowledge that these directors have to do stuff. I mean, like Jim Burrows or the greats of it, even having worked with Fred Savage now a couple of times, these guys really, really know comedy. And there is a skill to setting shots right and to being able to make a joke funnier just by how you use the four cameras. And it was fun to learn it. It's fun to do it. And I appreciate people that do it well.
That's good to hear. And, of course, James Burrows, having directed, I think, all 17 of the episodes of Back to You, and he's, of course, an icon in the TV world. I mean, you know, having you on this podcast, had you thought about Back to You in the past decade since you played Dennis until now?
You know, well, I remember for a while I left the first scene, I think, when I first come in and meet her. I think I left that on my acting reel for a couple of years after, just because it was such a quirky, funny character. And it was so different than anything else that I had on there. But the only reason I think about it is that of late, since Sydney to the Mac started airing, you know, doing press and things like that, they ask a lot about why you like sitcoms. You know, why? Because I always say, sometimes they don't even ask, it's a question that's in response to my answer of saying, oh yeah, my favorite thing to work on is a sitcom, and they always say, why? And it always, then you start to kind of like percolate all the different shows you've worked on in your brain, and Back to You does come up as one of those shows where I go, boy, look at the people that you worked with on that show. And I didn't get to do anything with Ty directly, but I got to be there on tape night and, you know, be down in Video Village and watch the whole thing. And I mean, you're watching seriously really, really talented people do stuff. I mean, I did We're the Millers with Sean Hayes and, you know, and Margot and Will. And these people are, they're just funny, funny people. And, you know, some of them have been doing it a long time. And Kelsey Grammer could do anything. I think he's an incredibly talented actor, as he's shown throughout. He can be do drama. He can do, I mean, I think he's a Juilliard grad, if I'm not mistaken. But he can do... he can do drama, he can do comedy, but when you watch that guy do comedy, it's like watching Matt LeBlanc, a friend of mine writes on Matt's new show, and you go to a taping of that and you watch this guy, they're like a step above. The amount of knowledge they have on how to land a joke and how to make it funny and how to make you wait for something and time it out right, there's a real science and an art to it. I don't think people can just walk in and do it. So I've thought about that show because of the talent that was involved. When you look at the episode list of who was involved, it's, you know, I'm happy to have been a part of it, and I'm sure my 10,000 hours were, you know, I'm working on it still, I'm guessing. But at the time, I got a lot of benefit from those hours I worked on that show that week.
Yeah, well, we're so glad. Everybody who loves Back to You is so glad you were a part of it. Ian Reed Kessler, Dennis on Back to You, and of course on Sydney to the Max, Tuesdays at 8 Eastern on Disney Channel. Thank you so much for being on the Back to You podcast today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And go check out the episode if you haven't seen it and see if Dennis makes you laugh. I hope he does.
That's right. Yes, everybody watch out there. Yes, I think Dennis will make you laugh. One of the most memorable one-off characters of Back to You. Thanks again to Ian Reed Kessler for being on this episode of the Back to You podcast. Great insight into being on sitcoms and guest starring on sitcoms. I really think that is pivotal to a show. It is time for the trivia question associated with this episode. What is the name of the station manager that Chuck interacted with in Denver? Chuck hit on a woman his first day in Denver. Turned out she was this guy's wife. He hated Chuck at first, and then 2 weeks later, he liked him. The name of the station manager, if you know it, one guess per person, per episode, in this case for this episode, goes on Twitter, at BackToYouPod, for your chance to win the Back to You Season 1 DVD. I'll be announcing the winner on the final episode of this podcast, July 31st. Good luck. Next time will be episode 13, the start of phase 3 of the Back to You podcast, The New Boss. It's a big episode. I know I've been saying that with a lot of these episodes. They're kind of all big, but this is the episode where we see Montana for the first time in a while. We find out what happens to Montana, and we're introduced to a pivotal new character to this show as well, hence the title, The New Boss. It's all coming up for you, episode 13 of the Back to You podcast. As always, follow me on Twitter at LCJReviews. Follow the podcast at Back to You Pod for exclusive info, pictures, and updates. And if you want to watch these episodes of Back to You, you can do so on Amazon, Vudu, iTunes. Rent the DVD out of your local library or wherever you can to keep up with Back to You and the Back to You podcast, the greatest single season sitcom in television history. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thanks so much for listening to the Back to You podcast.